first in our Bill of Rights is the freedom to hear uncensored ideas and opinions, to think your own thoughts, and to say what's on your mind. We couldn't have liberty without it. Now, more than ever, it's good to spout off, to listen, debate, and participate. Here's your host of Spouting Off, commentator, columnist, and all-around rabble-rouser, Karen Cataline.
So great to be back on the air at our home base on Tuesdays and Thursdays. We got home bases all over the place, but on Tuesdays and Thursdays, we have our home base at 1590 AM WSMN and 95.3 FM. You don't have to live in Nashua, New Hampshire, the live free or die state, in order to join us, in order to participate. Heaven knows, everyone knows I don't live in Nashua, New Hampshire, but I am honored to be broadcasting from there, from the live free or die state. Boy, oh boy, lots going on. Before I get started, well, I am going to get started. Did you mark 9/11? 'Twas just 2 days ago on Sunday. And don't let anybody tell you what that day meant to us. Look at the unity, look at the patriotism, which was not a dirty word on 9/11/2001. We had been attacked and Americans came together. I don't generally like those kind of platitudes, Americans coming together, but we have a threat from within that is trying to divide us more vociferously than ever. Black against white, old against young, rich against poor, conservatives against liberals, left against right. But it's worse than that. It is people who love America versus those who hate America but want to tell us how we must, not ask, how we must change it, how we must hand over our freedom to global elitists, how we must hand over our liberty to communists, socialists, and a lot of people on the bandwagon who have been de-educated as to what that means. You can't have these crazy utopian ideas if you don't force people to go along. Eventually, force must be used, and the supposed utopia that is promised turns into hell on earth. We've seen it again and again. We're watching it come to our shores from within, and we got to tell the truth about it. 9/11 was a time in which we all felt connected, similar. We were horrified at having been attacked. Now we're being attacked, ladies and gentlemen, but by people who are telling us it's all for our own good. Can you imagine if the hijackers on 9/11, who flew planes into the World Trade Center at the Pentagon and in Pennsylvania, if they had said, well, all of this is for your own good. We're going to kill ourselves and kill as many of you as we can, but all of this is for our own good. The people that are telling us it is for our own good, which must not be believed, are the same people that are trying to change this country into something it was never meant to be. So never forget is nobody has a monopoly on that slogan. Never forget 9/11. Never forget what you felt. Yes, there's a whole nother generation of kids that think of 9/11 like we thought of Pearl Harbor. It was in another time. There's also that same group of people that hates America as it was founded, wants to create global communism and socialism, of which America stands in the way, that are telling us that 9/11 didn't mean what we thought it meant. 9/11 was not what we thought. It must have been our fault. When you're trying to demean a country, destroy a country, demoralize a country, you're going to turn them into the perpetrators and the perpetrators into victims. 9/11, ladies and gentlemen, wasn't about Islamophobia. It wasn't about, quote, diversity. It was about right and wrong and the cheapening of human life and one ideology deciding that the people who disagree with them don't deserve to live. Where have we heard that before? You know, if you have a universal principle that life is worthwhile, then you don't get to decide who lives and who dies unless that person is, and I'm not trying to get into a death penalty debate here, unless that person or people are a threat to your very survival. It's a universal truth. And I didn't even plan on talking about 9/11, but it's a good place to start. And while 9/11 is getting stomped all over, people the world over are treating Queen Elizabeth, may she rest in peace, as some kind of a world leader for everyone, the queen of the world. She wasn't the queen of the world. She was a lovely lady. But, you know, we fought a war so that we wouldn't have monarchs and kings and queens who had different rights, who were entitled to things we weren't all entitled to. One of the most brilliant things our founders created in these United States of America is that we could be self-governing and that no one is above the law. Not the slogan that the left is holding over our heads as they behave as if they are above the law. I don't know, like Hillary Clinton running around saying no one is above the law as she behaved exactly like that is meant to drive you a little crazy. It's a little bit of gaslighting. She knows how ridiculous and preposterous that is, but her brazenness is designed to suppress dissent. Her brazenness is designed to give her supporters something to squawk about and to divert attention from reality, much like the emperor who has no clothes. If the emperor is brazen enough to walk around, I don't know if he was self-deluded or not. I suspect he was, to claim that he had beautiful threads when people knew he was naked, then it shut people up. It shut them up so that they wouldn't have to, so they knew that you were not allowed to tell the truth anymore. You had to go along with the pretend. Go along with the pretend. I guess it's a little like, and I'm not too much for biblical references, but I'm learning and I'm studying, so I guess I'm getting a few more of them. It's like when, and I sort of think of it as a parable, some people take it literally, when Adam and Eve ate of the wrong tree. Again, I think of it more as a parable, in which suddenly they were embarrassed. They weren't embarrassed before, but then suddenly when they had the knowledge that they weren't really ready for, they became embarrassed of their nakedness. I think the emperor would have been embarrassed at his nakedness when somebody had the guts and the courage to just tell the truth, to have someone, a little boy, say, "Wait a minute, he's naked." Ah, the innocence and the openness and honesty of children. Well, we have to be, as children in this regard, open and honest and call them like we sees them. That's what my dear old dad used to say, call them, I calls them like I sees them. And that was never against the law. It wasn't a threat to, quote, democracy or our republic, to call them as you see them. Somebody who has called them like she's seen them and has had, it shouldn't require courage, but in fact it has, is somebody I interviewed a couple of months ago. She was a dream to get on the air, but because she had a book and she sent me a book, I got to have her on the air and I interviewed her a couple times. Would love to interview her about this latest article. Dr. Naomi Wolf, just a model of courage. She stood up for her values. She was a liberal Democrat who believed in freedom, and once upon a time, liberal Democrats did believe in many of the same things. They believed in freedom of speech. They believed that our bodies are, we deserve body autonomy, and not just to have an abortion, but to say yay or nay about what we put in our bodies. Once upon a time, liberal Democrats led the way on alternative medicines, health food stores, pure or drinking water. Some of it, we thought it was a little goofy, but they led the way. They led the way on littering our streets. Now, they do exactly as they're told. They automatically hate, demean, and despise and put down people who won't take an experimental jab, which now we're seeing more and more and more and more. The people who chose not to take that jab were right all along. I even saw, I'm getting off on a tangent, I do that. I even saw a video, a spectacular, touching video of a man who said, I took the vaccine and I am making a video on Twitter to apologize to all the people unvaxxed about what they went through, the persecution, the hatred. People lost family members because they made a different choice, a choice that turned out to be horribly wrong. Comply turned out to be horribly wrong, and people, many of them, including Dan Bongino, are regretting it bitterly to have believed. Because, you know, once upon a time, too, vaccines were, you know, they saved lives. But just because one vaccine saves lives doesn't mean that you should take every vaccine they tell you to, especially when they's telling you to, have lost their credibility for your best interest. Nobody needs to fully 100% trust anybody. Sure, don't trust me, but if somebody's been lying to you all along, has proven and shown that they have no respect for human life or innocence or law-abiding citizens, you don't automatically take their word for it. Some people did, and they're regretting it. And that was a touching, touching video. Now, where was I? Dr. Naomi Wolf put out an article, which I highly recommend that you go to. I highly recommend that you get on her free newsletter. It's, The Daily Clout, clout.io, I do believe. And this article was so touching, was so profound. I love it. I got to be quick because, boy, I'm running out of time in this segment. The article is called Opening Boxes from 2019, Annals of Corruption, Objects from a Vanished World Reveal Rotten Institutions. If you read nothing today, read this article about looking back. Dr. Naomi Wolf is now, I think, and I don't quote me on this exactly, remarried happily to a former police officer, and she fled New York City. She was a part of the New York social scene. She was a speechwriter for Bill Clinton. She wrote the quintessential women's lib book called Backlash on Femininity. She was and is, you know, a feminist and famous. And she stood up and said, wait a minute, all my liberal friends at the beginning of the COVID were just rolling over, bowing down to what they were being told. And this article poignantly, beautifully describes possessions that she had, and she fled New York City with her husband, and there were lots of things in storage that reminded her of a days gone by. And if you're wondering what happened to the liberals of old that believed in freedom of speech, that would have stood strong against tyranny, who are now the instruments of tyranny, well, she writes about it. I gotta go. We have a great couple of guests ready. Don't go anywhere. Karen Cataline, you're listening to Spouting Off in WSMN Nashua, New Hampshire. Jazz to have you with us. Stay tuned.
You're listening to Spouting Off with Karen Cataline.
Hello, I'm Mike Lindell, inventor of MyPillow. Thanks to your support, you've helped make MyPillow become one of the fastest growing companies in America. Over the last 12 years, you've helped MyPillow create thousands of jobs right here in the USA. Every MyPillow is made with passion here in my home state of Minnesota to ensure you get the best sleep of your life.
One of the things that I really like about MyPillow is the support. It gives my neck a little hug.
I've never slept better in my life. What's better than a great night's sleep?
Call or go online to take advantage of my best offer ever. For a limited time, when you use your promo code, you can get premium MyPillows regularly $69.98, now only $29.98. With our 60-day money-back guarantee, you have nothing to lose.
Sleep well, America!
Call 1-800-867-0416 and use the promo code RAM, R-A-M. That's 1-800-867-0416 and use the promo code RAM.
For the best night's sleep in the whole wide world, visit MyPillow.com.
And now, more Spouting Off with Karen Cataline.
Everybody, welcome back to Spouting Off. We are waiting for our first guest. Let's see if we have our first guest handy. She's on hold. I love talking to her. We're both Karens. You know, on one of my programs, I say I got my parents to name me Karen before I was born so I could grow up to be a punchline. I gotta give her a proper introduction. Love talking to her. She is a conservative candidate for New Hampshire governor. I think that's right. Yeah. Karen Testerman, wife, mother of four, grandmother to 12 children, and a liberty activist fighting for the people of New Hampshire, whether it's defending life, education, energy, what have you. And today is the primary, and we've got her. Karen Testerman joins us here on Spouting Off.
Hi, Karen. How are you?
It is great to talk to you. I'm doing well. And so how are you on this voting day?
Actually, I'm very positive and having a good time, so I can't complain.
Great. Let's go right off the bat. What do you want people to know in New Hampshire that can vote for you? And hopefully, when you are the Republican nominee, what people around the country can do to support you in your race against John Sununu for governor of New Hampshire?
Well, I'm running against Chris Sununu right now because we're doing the primary.
Sorry.
Yep,
Chris.
That's okay. It is the dynasty.
Everybody does that, right?
You're right, exactly. Right now, today's the voting day. Most people, the polls are open until 7 in most areas, so be sure you go out and vote Karen Testerman for governor. The other thing is the main reason that I am different from any of the other candidates, including the current governor, is because I've been in the trenches fighting for the people of New Hampshire for the last several years. And as you said in your introduction, whether it's education, whether it's energy, voter integrity, I've been out there trying to make sure that our voices are heard. We, the people, need to take this state back and turn it back to the original intent where our God-given rights are protected and we're not being dictated to on what we can and can't do, what businesses can stay open and which ones have to stay closed, or how far away we can stand from our very best friend. I mean, that's what's been going on for the last 3 years.
It's astonishing, isn't it? One day it was America, and next day it was a jump the shark moment when all of a sudden using fear-mongering and a virus, because people are always concerned about their health, the state came in and told you where you should walk, whether you can leave your home, and that you must wear a rag on your face to do so. It was a jump-the-shark moment, and we've talked about it. Tell us about your candidacy and what you've been talking about on the campaign trail and how that campaign has been going. Today's the moment of decision.
Right. So one of the things that I've done is to really get out. We've had flag waves all over the state in different places, and those are our true patriots, who people who really care about what's going on in this state, and they're very, very concerned about whether or not their voices will be heard, whether their votes even going to be counted. And so I've been out supporting them in that. The other thing that we've done in this state is we actually fired the governor. And I joined the forces when we were presenting the paperwork to him. The other thing is that we also found that the machines in this state are unconstitutional. So we filed letters of trespass with the governor and the attorney general, trying to get them to stop using these unconstitutional machines. And if they wanted to do it, then let's propose a constitutional amendment. But meanwhile, let's get rid of them. Let's not do that. But the governor, who was supposed to, once he realizes that there is a problem, is actually supposed to stop any action any time there's a law or an action that is repugnant to the Constitution. He's supposed to nullify it, and he didn't. So,
Karen,
these are things that.
I'm sorry. I was just wanting. I interrupted you there. Please finish your thought. I'm so sorry.
Oh no, that's okay. I was done.
Okay. You mentioned fired our governor. Usually people figure when the people fire their governor, it's because they vote him out of office. What did you mean by that, we fired our governor?
We actually served papers on the governor, much like they did way, way back when they ran Governor Wentworth out of the out of his home. We didn't run our governor out of his home, but we did notify him that he had violated his constitutional responsibilities to the people of the state of New Hampshire, and that we were that he was illegal in that respect.
Mm.
So we served.
That's huge, because
you're fired.
There is an awful. There are people all across the country who would love to have fired their governor. Can you say? Governor of Michigan, governor of New York, and then they installed somebody even more left-wing. Governor of Colorado, who, you know, put everybody in masks and kept it up for a year and shut down oil and gas production. Can you give others some suggestion on how they do that? I mean, even if it doesn't fully get followed through, firing them, that's important. Empowers the people, which is what they don't want.
Well, they have to know their state constitution, first of all. And once they know what the Bill of Rights says in their particular constitution, then they can start exercising those rights and calling attention to them. And actually, one of the things they need to do is start going to the press and letting the press help them. And, of course, we know that the lamestream press doesn't necessarily help us out in that area, but we can at least start making the noises. And we have been doing, like I said, the flag waves have just been growing over and over and over. And so one nurse actually stood out on a corner in New Hampshire, and she started out by herself, and by the end of the week she had quite a large group with her. And that group has now grown into a We the People movement, where they've actually held their own debate with the top 30 offices, and, you know, put together their slate and encouraged and done a lot of activity to empower people, give them something to do. This is how you make it happen. And that's been a huge thing. It's called the Resolve.
That's excellent. Karen, I know you have not even remotely been afraid to point to this jump the shark moment that we all lived through. We saw the devastation. We saw the Marxism being installed in this very country using a relatively non-lethal virus as an excuse to impose this upon us. There are people around the country saying, oh, we can't remind voters of that. What would you tell them and other candidates who don't want to run on what was done, especially since what was done almost uniformly was done based on party? The leftist so-called blue states, they're really red, did it one way, and the conservative so-called red states, which are really blue, did it another way.
Right. So one of the things you have to know is that this, we stop and think about it. Our government is supposed to be doing innocuous type things, like making sure that our roads are repaired and that we have transportation and that we can actually conduct business across state lines and around the world, and that our borders are protected if we ever were to be attacked. That's what government's supposed to do. It's not supposed to be providing everything for you. So this whole health thing is, in some respects, taking away your individual responsibility to make decisions for yourself. And so that's, you know, this is what Kristi Noem did up in South Dakota. Her whole thing was, this is what government is supposed to do, and this is what you as an individual are supposed to be able to do. And that's basically where you go with it. But we the people are not reliant on somebody else doing the work for us. You know, when you're at your home and you need to take the garbage out, you're not waiting for your next door neighbor to come do it for you. And in a way, that's what we've started to do. And we point our finger and say, well, we elected this person, now they're going to take care of us. But we forget that we've got three fingers pointing back at us that says that we not only have to keep them accountable, but maybe we also have to step up and help do something as well.
And you know what, Karen, since I am pretty fond of the philosophies behind these things, I think young people, and maybe people of all ages, have been de-educated about the fact that self-sufficiency and independence and accountability is the only way you can be free. And people have not made that connection because it was sort of brainwashed out of them, many of them, especially the young, who think that being entitled and being taken care of sounds so good. It sounds so good to feel like, oh, I'm entitled without having to do anything. What they don't realize is it's the gold standard. Them what has the gold sets the standard. If you're not willing to be held accountable for your behavior, you don't get to be free. Someone else will tell you what you can and cannot do, what you can and cannot have. And I just don't think people know that. Once upon a time, this was fundamental, basic, no matter whether you were left or right or Republican or Democrat, people agreed on that point. They don't anymore. So what do you tell young people when they say, well, but, you know, I deserve to have my student loans paid for, quote, by other people, right?
Did you hear the downfall of that, though? Is that
no?
Yes, you're gonna get your $20,000 or $30,000 paid for, but now you have to claim them on your income tax return, and you have to pay the taxes on them.
Well, of course, because it's a debt. It's a debt repayment or whatever. But the government always gets its 10 pounds of flesh.
Right.
and people don't think that. Oh, I'm going to palm it off on people who didn't sign off on that loan and didn't benefit from that loan. And they think that is a good thing until they understand this comes back to bite you every time. Go ahead.
Right. Well, it's the same old robbing Peter to pay Paul. And I keep going back to Davy Crockett, you know, when he was out on the campaign trail and found out that when he voted for the military widow's house that was burned, and he said then in Congress, yes, we can certainly allow some money to go to help her out. He got home and the farmer said, I'm not voting for you ever again because you're spending money that's not yours. And it wasn't until he went around the county there and convinced the people, or confessed to the people, that he had made a mistake with that farmer, by the way. And then he went down to the floor of Congress and actually said, this is not our money to spend. The charitable dollar belongs to the individual to decide where they want to spend it and what programs they want to support. So this is the government really is supposed to be extremely limited in what it can do.
Yes, and what we've seen is the consolidation of power, the erasure of boundaries, the erasure of constraints, and then conning people, the citizens, into believing that this should benefit them. Republicans, we have only a couple minutes. You've done talk radio. You know how it works. How do we, first of all, why don't I just do this? Give you the floor. We got about a minute, little over a minute, to talk to the voters, New Hampshire, and people all over the country. What's the last thing you want to leave us with?
Well, you know, we have the greatest state in the union, in my opinion, and we the people have to step up to the plate and do whatever we can to secure that. And the best way to do that is to look at the records of the people that are on that ballot. Make sure that they, if they've got a record, that you know what it is and you vote that record. So that's why I say I've been in this battle for several years. And some people say, well, you know, you've already tried twice. You shouldn't be given another opportunity. But Ronald Reagan ran three times and they kept saying he was unelectable. But he did win in the end. And it's because of the person's personality, their work record, their integrity. Probably the most important thing is to look, are they walking the talk and are they really the people that they say they are? And so that's my outstanding quality. I am a strong, capable woman who can lead this state with, I've got the history, and I can lead this state back into liberty so that we can continue to live free or die.
Well, and never was it more important. Go ahead, what?
I was going to say, and don't forget to vote today before the polls close for Karen Testerman.
Karen Testerman, a supported and endorsed candidate by Right America Media. Should have said that up front. Thank you. Good luck today, and we hope you prevail.
Thank you so much, Karen. Have a great, great afternoon.
You too. You too. Karen Testerman there. We're going to be right back right after this.
You're listening to Spouting Off with Karen Cataline.
I was asking God through prayer, seeking a good news source. I believe he showed me the Epoch Times. I deliver the mail and came across an issue. The front page intrigued me and I subscribed. Now I cut out articles and give them to friends and family. I leave old issues at the library and around my community. We read it to our kids and love the positive messages in each article. So why do I think everyone should read the Epoch Times? Because they're bringing back traditional values to this great country.
Hi, it's Karen Cataline. It's been almost a decade since I wrote Fat Lash Food Police in the Fear of Thin. It's about my early experiences in child beauty pageants and being put on extreme diets. Remember when that was shocking? Sadly, that seems like child's play compared to what we are watching today when politicians and woke corporations are actually advocating for the sexualization of children. Everyone's children. We're watching a frontal attack on childhood innocence. This is one story, my story. Fat Lash illustrates and explains why good boundaries are essential for kids to grow up healthy. They need their parents to set them, not the government. Get Fat Lash today. It's available in paperback or ebook at Amazon or at my website, KarenCataline.com.
And now, more Spouting Off with Karen Cataline.
Welcome back, everyone, to Spouting Off. If you'd like to join us or join me, shall I say, write me, send me a carrier pigeon, whatever. Let me know, send me an email of what you'd like to hear on the show. And we always welcome your participation in any format. I'm on all the social medias. Yeah, I am. Just with my name, Karen, spelled the normal way, Kataline, KATALINE.com. And you can write me at Karen@KarenKataline.com. I do get a little bit of email, and I will respond to you. And you can talk to me via email off the air. I spoke to our next guest this morning, and we said we should start a little clique of talk show hosts that get along and like each other a lot, and that we could talk about just about anything. And in fact, it's true. His name is Drew Allen. He's a conservative, author, speaker, blogger, actor, screenwriter. And as long as my husband isn't here to hear, he's hot. You should look at his picture. He's hot. He's young. He's married. And he's an independent film producer. Drew Allen, thank you so much for joining us here on Spouting Off.
Hey, Karen, it's good to be with you. The introductions get better every time. So, you know, that encourages me to come on as often as possible.
Well, there you go. There you go. And along with all the other stuff you do, you also work for one of the stellar bookers, and you book guests for other talk shows. So I get to be in touch with you on and off fairly regularly, because we talk show hosts, we have this endless appetite for great guests, and you help us to do that. You're writing a book, Drew Allen, and I want to just start with that, because sometimes the best stuff comes when you're just starting to research, because you have a passion for an issue. So give us a inside glimpse of what it is you're writing about without giving anything away, and why you chose to write about this subject we talked about this morning, and go for it and tell us.
Well, you know, we talk about where we are as a country and what's needed to move forward. You know, obviously we're experiencing a lot of pain, and much of the issue is the indoctrination in the country. People just cannot see the truth in reality. You know, my unique background is that I've been around Democrats my entire life, but I've maintained my conservative ideals, right? So I went to a Jesuit elitist all-male college preparatory school in Dallas, Texas. I worked in the fashion industry for Marc Jacobs in Milan, Italy, and New York, and Los Angeles. I was an actor, screenwriter, film producer. So all of these are liberal bastions, you know. They're not conservative bastions. And so what I want to do here, and the working title is Why I'm Not a Democrat, I want to explain to people.
Oh, I love it.
Because unlike Democrats who live in bubbles and never question themselves, I have been in the lines in my whole life. So I want to acknowledge some of the arguments the left makes that I've been around my whole life, and I want to unravel them for them. And one of the most significant myths and lies out there of rewriting history is that the Democratic Party is somehow, you know, the de facto party of civil rights and Black Americans. That is not the case. And one of the points that I'm making now that I think is just interesting from a historical perspective is, look, it's this through line that there's this lie of the big switch, right? That the Democratic Party, despite an entire history devoted to slavery and anti-civil rights, suddenly 1964, Lyndon B. Johnson, one of the most racist Americans ever to walk this earth, you know, signed the Civil Rights Act in 1964 into law. And since then, Democrats have pointed to that as Democrats having a change of heart. But mm-hmm. they didn't. You know, all they've done is, you know, look, it's still the plantation mentality. You know, they seek to deny Blacks opportunities. And they teach them the same kind of communist rhetoric that pro-slavery advocates used in defense of slavery, which was, you know, look, Blacks aren't really capable of surviving on their own, so they're better off actually on these plantations. We are shielding them from competition, shielding them from the real world, and they turn them into victims. And so that's kind of what's taking place here. But the Democratic ideology has been the same. I mean, you know, after the Civil War, the Democratic Party remained intact. And that's a marked difference, I think, Karen, between what you see with other kind of terrible regimes throughout history, like the Nazi Party, right? You know, after the Nazis were defeated, There was an Allied effort they abolished the Nazi Party. It was illegal. It couldn't exist anymore. And then they made every concerted effort that they could, as well as they could, to they call it denazification. They tried to get rid of that ideology as best they could from, the social and cultural aspects of both Germany and Austria. But we didn't do that after the Civil War. We allowed the Democratic Party to remain as a viable political party. And I think that Republicans were naive then as they are today, in the sense that we inherently are good people based on our philosophy and our ideology. So we believe and we look for the best in people, and we are kind of sometimes our brains are clouded by our hearts and hopes. And the Democratic Party, 10 years after the Civil War ended, they were threatening Tilden or war if their candidate, the Democrat candidate, Samuel Tilden, wasn't elected president.
Mm. That is just wonderful. And I can hear the passion in your voice. That's why it's just so much fun to talk to you before this book comes out. I've always wondered, I'm considerably older than you, Drew Allen. And I always wondered years ago how it was that the old Soviet Union, I was a kid then, before the wall came down, could outlaw ideas, and how, for example, we all know people of faith are always a threat to communist regimes because they answer to a higher authority, and communism and totalitarians want to be the higher authority. They want to be God. So they're competing against God, or as people know God to be. How do you ban an ideology?
Yeah, well, that's something that's impossible to do. But what you do, what is necessary? Obviously there's still anti-Semites throughout this world. They exist in Germany and Austria, certainly. But the Nazis, as an organization, as a party, are still maligned. They're still vilified. They're not viewed favorably.
And rightfully so.
and rightfully so, exactly.
Yeah.
But, the Democratic Party, they were essentially permitted they just engaged in a PR campaign, right? So they just changed their strategy. Their hearts and mentality didn't change. They're still totalitarian. They have told people that, they're not that party that they used to be. America's done a very poor job, even since the Civil War, maligning them. We kind of permitted them to get away with what they did, starting kind of in the 40s under Franklin Delano Roosevelt and afterwards, to pull the wool over people's eyes. And look, people are embracing censorship, embracing totalitarianism, embracing the targeting of their political opponents. Democrats are cheering this right now. They are hoping to see Donald Trump at any moment, perp walked and put in a prison cell. And this is flourishing. The problem.
That's right. They go right along. I want to just remind our listeners and just mention to you that part of my monologue today was to alert people to a spectacular article. God, I'd like to get her back on the show. So you work on that, Drew. Dr. Naomi Wolf wrote a piece, because I'm on her list, called Opening Boxes from 2019, in which she lived this about face almost instantaneously during the COVID, when suddenly liberals were going after people for dissent. They were abandoning all principles of body autonomy and integrity and freedom and liberty and freedom of speech and everything they had lectured us about, which, of course, is how they got away with reframing themselves. This is just as an aside, because you said that they shouldn't have been allowed to get away with it. What a fabulous point, because they started lecturing everybody else about what they did, and this is exactly what they're doing with everything. They are accusing others of what they do. But I just want to mention Naomi Wolf's article, because she watched it happen, and they all folded, like not even a cheap suit. They folded completely and did exactly as they were told. Astonishing.
Yeah, it is astonishing that people don't have the resiliency or even the principle to stand up against it. I mean, you're right. People do fold like cheap lawn chairs if someone utters an ill word against them. But, you know, this is part of the secularism of society, too, because even Christians or Jews or people that claim to have this faith beyond party. Well, look, I mean, they should be looking to what God would say, for example, about their actions. But instead, they fear the word of man more than the condemnation of God. And this is very troubling. So, you know, even the church and everything else have become very, very secular. I mean, look at the types of preaching and everything going on. I mean, as a Christian, I can tell you, I mean, it's scary and it's dangerous.
Well, and it broke my heart to see synagogues and churches close and just dutifully close when told to by the government. And it didn't occur to them for whatever the reason, or they just didn't want to make waves, or they were directly infiltrated by the left. Much of that has happened too. I see it in synagogues. The entire reform movement are really, as Dennis Prager says, practicing liberalism instead of Judaism. But they closed their doors and they didn't know their constitution. Wait a minute. This is the freedom of religion. What are you doing? So how, just getting off the subject there, let's get back onto the subject of this terrific book you're writing. What do you hope the book will teach people who love liberty on how to fight back now? Because the day is dark, the day is late, and we're watching this progress at a frightening pace. What can we do to turn it around? A lot of people are frozen in place because they feel small. They feel helpless. Tough question,
well,
I know.
Yeah, well, it is. And that's part of the strategy of the Democratic Party. I mean, they're always trying to make it appear as if they outnumber us, and that's not the case. I mean, look, they tried to downplay the Canadian truck protest, that movement. You know, they call it some small radical fringe group. It wasn't. It wasn't at all. They vastly outnumbered the tyrants that were trying to put them down. But you know, I think that. I mean, what we're doing now is helpful. I mean, we say things. that are out of principle that I think other people appreciate because it kind of verifies what they believe as well. It makes them not feel alone. I hope this book. Because here's the thing. There are so many Democrats and certainly independents who are ready to move away from the Democratic Party. But we've got to cut through this lie that the Republican Party is just inherently worse than anything the Democratic Party could ever do. And so, you know, as somebody who has been around Democrats my whole life, I hope that there's an opportunity to have those people read this and finally see how they've been lied to for so long. Because it's unforgivable. I mean, if somebody lies to me once, maybe I'll forgive them and you know, give them another chance. But, you know, I mean, the Democrats have been lying for decades about everything, and they still have this loyalty. But it's religion for them. I mean, think about the black, quote-unquote, black constituency in America. I mean, Donald Trump finally, I mean, he got 20% of the black vote in 2020. But since 1964, no Republican presidential candidate had ever gotten more than 15% of the black vote. Can you name any other constituency in America, including the Rainbow Coalition, the LGBTQ plus community, that votes so overwhelmingly, loyally, you know, nearly unanimously for any political party? It doesn't exist.
Well, we have history that as soon as you capture the heart or the minds of people and get them to believe they're victims, they believe also that they are somehow turncoats if they don't. You know, being Jewish, that happens even in the Jewish community to a great deal of an extent, that Jews feel like they wouldn't. Well, if I had a nickel for every time people ask me, how come Jews vote so liberal? But we don't do a very good job, you're right, of making the case. And then we're too nice when the left has no principles whatsoever. They can accuse the left of us of inciting violence, and then they go and do it. So I'm going to leave you, ask you to have the last word in the last couple of minutes here on spouting off what you want us to leave us with. When will this book come out? That's the first thing. I don't want to pressure. You're just starting, but it's great topic.
Yeah.
Great topic.
Well, it's all there. I just have to make the time to put it on the page. And so, you know, I only really have time to work on this book between the hours of 9 p.m. and, you know, 2 a.m. But I'm hoping, but, you know, by December, so I can have it finished. But, you know, two points, I guess. You know, you mentioned, you know, how can Jews, you know, kind of basically abandon, you know, other Jews and join the Democratic Party? Well, look, there were 1,200 Jewish Nazis. I mean, how is it possible that Jews could serve in Hitler's army? You had black slave owners in the antebellum era. The idea that just because someone is black and looks like somebody else or is Jewish or whatever else, and they are de facto supporters of those people is garbage. I mean,
that's the left's idea. If you don't vote for me, you ain't black. Right.
Exactly. Exactly. Yeah. And that's the plantation mentality. You know, I mean, look, the plantation owner believes that, of course, blacks were born into slavery by virtue of their skin. And Democrats also believe that blacks are born by virtue of their skin color into the Democratic Party. And they exist to serve and vote for Democrats. But we can't be on the defense anymore. That's something important we talked about on our previous conversation this morning. You know, every time they accuse us of something, we sit here and throw up our hands and say, no, we're not. We need to get past that and go on the offense and start labeling these people as they are.
Yeah, I think fighting fire with fire is important. Using their language and their newly made up words, we got to start making up some words of our own. Like one of my favorites, you can borrow it or steal it if you like, Smoletting.
That's good.
Smoletting. That's what Biden did. Yeah, that's what Biden did on September 1st is manufacturing victimhood out of thin air so that he could turn the tables on his very political enemies. They love victimhood. They must be victim all the time. You can use that. Anyway, tell everybody, Drew, how we can find you and follow you and become a fan of you like I am.
Well, I appreciate it. Yeah, I put all my work up at drewallen.substack.com. And then my podcast is The Drew Allen Show, available everywhere podcasts exist.
Are so found. That's right. Drew Allen, we so appreciate having you. We'll have you on again. And help us get Naomi back on the program.
Hey, we will. We'll do it soon.
She's wonderful. Boy, she's doing great work. You take care and good luck on that book. We'll talk to you before then.
Thanks, Karen.
Thanks. Well, that about does it for us here on Spouting Off. Live up to the live free or die state, but let's not die, let's live free. Karen Cataline, I'll talk to you on Thursday at 1 p.m. Eastern on WSNN.